to the session on creating a federated extranet with ADF SV2 and SharePoint 2010. My name is Graham Pohl. I'm a senior infrastructure architect with KiwiBank. And with me is Patrick Harkins. He's a senior SharePoint consultant with KnowledgeQ. In this session, we're going to be starting off by talking about some of the advantages of using claims in an extranet scenario. We're going to be talking about some of the planning considerations that you're going to want to take into account when you're thinking about your design. And we're going to include a demo of how to configure ADFS V2 as a SharePoint identity provider. Then Patrick's going to talk about the influence that claims have on allocating permissions within SharePoint, and we'll demo setting permissions on a SharePoint object based on claims. We've then got a number of hints and tips to share with you that we've picked up with our experiences, and we should have some time for some question and answers at the end. So let's start by talking about some of the advantages of claims when you're looking at an extranet. So one of the biggest things that's changed in business in the last decade is that we've become a lot more flexible, and a lot of the traditional organizational boundaries have broken down. And for us in IT, this is a big problem because the people accessing our resources don't necessarily belong to our organization, but are outside of it. And when we look at the traditional ways in which we solved that problem, it used to be with things like domain trusts between the organizations, or by populating all of the users into your internal directory. And both of those certainly work, but they do tend to have a pretty high cost, and they tend to have a pretty poor user experience. So how can federation help? Well, one of the biggest aspects is that it can reduce the cost of partnering, because your large partners already have these existing corporate directories and they're already authenticating those users. So why are you going to go and duplicate all of that cost of provisioning and deprovisioning the users and providing support to them when they're already doing that? With federation, we can delegate that to our partners. Another aspect is about agility. So when either a new organization arrives that you wish to partner with or a new person joins that organization, you've got quite a long lead-up time in order to be able to make that connection to them. And often you've got some kind of manual process before that user gets provisioned into your systems. And during that time, those partners, the users of those partners aren't going to be productive. So you can reduce that productivity gap by federating, because as soon as that user has a log on to their partner organization, they're going to have access to your resources. Now, that's all great for users who join organizations when they're new. If they can't access the resources they need, they're going to do something about it. They're going to call the help desk, or they're going to get access. But if they change role in that organization or they leave, there's probably no one being very proactive about that. And that can become a huge compliance headache. So one of the other great advantages is that as soon as people leave that organization or their role is changed within the partner organization, their access rights to your resources are going to change straight away. So federating our extranet is going to have advantages both for us as the host of the resources and the partners who wish to access them. So what are the kinds of things that we need to think about before when we're looking at designing our implementation? And so one of the first things we're going to need to think about is our placement, both of our federation servers, whether we're going to need federation server proxies, and which attribute stores we're going to use, which directories we're going to use for attribute stores. So some of the kinds of questions you need to ask yourself is it just your partners who are accessing your resources, or are your users also going to be going out and accessing resources that belong to your partners? Are you just looking at an extranet, or do you also have, say, line of business applications that your partners access? Do you potentially have some cloud-based applications that either your users or your partners use? Or possibly, are you even looking to leverage a cloud-based identity service like OpenID or LiveID? And this tails into the next line here about the choice about whether to delegate the identity to your partners or provide one for them. And as I said earlier, if you've got a large corporate partner, they've probably got an existing directory, and they've probably got some very robust processes for onboarding and offboarding staff. But if you were dealing with, say, a large group of independent contractors, that centralized directory probably isn't going to exist, and you're probably still going to want to provide identity for them. But chances are that might well not be your corporate directory, or it might be an opportunity to utilize a cloud-based identity provider like OpenID or AliveID. So that should sort of give us as a guide as to where we're placing where we're going to place federation servers and proxies, which directories we might use. The next thing that we need to think about is the claim syntax that we're going to get from our partners. So when we're going to be setting permissions in SharePoint, we're going to be doing that. We can only do that based on the claims attributes that we receive from the partners. So we need to agree up front. If you want to assign permissions, say, based on the office that somebody comes from or the group within your partner organization they belong to or the division, you need to make sure that you've agreed with the partner that they're going to pass that across as a claim. And it's not only the attributes that you might need to grant permissions, but you also need to think about what else you have in SharePoint that you know about those people. So, for instance, a large number of SharePoint sites involve use of the profile service that looks into the directory of users and gets information from that. Now, when we move to a claims basis, you have no visibility into the partner directories. So if you have something that was written to expect to query the profile service and get, say, the person's phone number or the manager they report to, what you're going to have to do instead is look at another way of getting that, and that could include passing those across as claims. And the last aspect that you really want to think about in planning is commercials. So and particularly here, we're focused on any regulatory compliance requirements. So if your organization has compliance requirements about their verification of user identity or about limiting the access to resources to only those people who require it, and you're going to be delegating that to one of your partners, you're going to find it very difficult to satisfy an auditor that that's being done if you don't have some kind of formal agreement in place. So what you need there is something that is signed with your partners that talks about the obligations they have that match up with the compliance requirements that are put upon you. So at this point, it might be useful to talk about the KiwiBank scenario and why we're looking to make the kinds of decisions that we have. So KiwiBank as an organization works with a lot of different partners. We work with the other banks in New Zealand. We're part of the New Zealand Post Group, so we work with other organisations within the group. We also work with organisations like Air New Zealand and Xero. And with virtually all of those partners, we have a need to share documents securely. But that's not the only thing that we have partner access to. We also have line of business applications that some of our partners come into. And we also have two of the services we provide to our internal staff. Our HR and training systems are cloud-based. And at the moment, the KiwiBank staff have another set of credentials that they use to access those. So for us, while the extranet is the starting point, we're also looking to leverage Federation in other ways. And our big drivers there are to reduce the cost of partnering with these other organizations and also to improve the experience for the users at our partners. At the moment, a lot of them really struggle with having a different username and password, and particularly different expiry and complexity requirements. And it's especially for those people who don't use them often. You know, we have a lot of users who might only come in once every 2 months, 3 months, and literally every time they're coming in, they're hitting password expiry. So let's go and walk through what's going to happen with a connection from a partner user into the KiwiBank intranet. So if we start by looking at the partner user over here is going to browse across to the KiwiBank extranet. That's going to look to see if they have a token stored as a browser cookie, and in this case they won't. So they're going to be redirected to a Federation proxy server. Now, because we're a bank and these clients are coming in across the internet, we don't want to expose our internal Federation server directly. So we've chosen to implement a Federation proxy server. Now, because we have more than one partner, the first thing that that user is going to see is a home realm discovery page. And what that does, it selects the correct partner federation server to send them to authenticate. Now, that's the default behavior. There are ways you can bypass that. You can either have a unique URL for each of your partners, or if you have some identifier about your partners, say they come from specific IP address ranges, you can customize that page to bypass it so that they automatically get sent to the correct federation server. So that's going to put the user back into the federation server in their own organization. And that could be ADFS v2, but it could also be any other interoperable product. So it could be Tivoli Identity Manager, could be Oracle Identity Manager. They're going to be authenticated against the partner directory. And the claims that they get issued are going to contain the attribute values in those claims are going to come from the partner directory. Then that user, the claims that they have are going to get placed in a token as a browser cookie. Two things are going to happen. It's going to get signed by this partner federation server, which means that when it arrives with us, we know where it came from and it hasn't been tampered with in transit. Can also optionally be encrypted so that if it were intercepted in transit, the information contained within it isn't visible. That may be important because you are talking about things like your AD group memberships. So if you are passing that across in the clear in some way, it may be the kind of information you don't wish to have visible. So now that the user has been redirected back to the extranet and SharePoint's extracted the claims from that token, the access to the content basically, in a similar way to if they were an Active Directory user or group, they would either be given access to the content directly, or that Active Directory user or group would be made part of a SharePoint group. Well, the same thing applies. They can, based on the claims that they have, they will either be given access to that individual object, or based on claims, they can be put into members of a SharePoint group. And Patrick's going to demonstrate that later on. The important thing to realize there is that the attributes that are coming across in those claims are the ones that come from the partner directory. And that's why when we talked about it earlier, we talked about the importance of agreeing those upfront with your partners. So let's go ahead and have a demonstration of how to configure ADFS v2 as a SharePoint identity provider. And this essentially happens in two halves. We're going to do the first half on the ADFS v2 server at our partner, and the second half on SharePoint. But you could do it the other way around if you preferred. So this is what you'd see at the... this is what you'd see at the end of having installed ADFS v2. So you'll note that it's sitting there saying that it requires a trusted relying party. So there are no applications or services at the moment that rely on this ADFS server. So we're going to go ahead and fire up the relying party trust wizard. And a lot of applications and services are capable of providing automated metadata to make them a relying party. SharePoint, unfortunately, is not. So you're going to have to enter that relying party data manually. We're just going to enter a description. We're going to enter a description here of the relying party. We're going to use the ADFS2 profile. This is where we would specify the token encryption certificate. So that would be, in this case, that would be KiwiBank's SharePoint server if we wanted to encrypt the certificate. The token. We would use the certificate from KiwiBank SharePoint there. And here this is where you specify the URL of the security token service in SharePoint. By default, it uses that URL as a relying party trust identifier. We're just going to enter another one which is a little bit shorter because it makes the script later on easier. This is essentially asking you whether you wish the default behavior to be to permit all users access or no users access. We're going to go ahead and have the default to permit access. There's a summary page there. And you'll notice here it's asking us to enter the claims rules dialog because we've told ADFS about SharePoint, that this relying party, but we haven't yet told it how we want it, which attributes we want it to extract and which directory we want them to extract it from. So this is the part where that agreement with the partner comes in. So we've told the partner that we want them to pass over email address and their AD group memberships. So we're going to send LDAP attributes as claims, or we're going to say this is email and AD groups. I'm going to select the attribute store, which is Active Directory. And this is where the importance of agreeing that syntax becomes very important, because when we look at something like email address, you'll notice there's actually multiple outgoing claim types. There's email address. There's also ADFS1 email address. Again, you could use either. The important thing here is that you and your partner both agree on which one you're going to be using. Again, there's multiple formats that we can extract the information from the directory in. So we can bring up AD group memberships across as SIDs, or unqualified names, or qualified names. Again, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that you agree with your partner which way you're going to do it.
I might like to add in there that at this stage, if you are deciding how you want to bring that information across from the other provider, even though it does specify SID there, it's much better to use the friendly name tag. When it comes down to applying permissions inside a SharePoint, having to type in a SID identifier is laborious. And you'll get to see later on when I get to assign permissions exactly how it can go wrong, especially if you're having to assign permissions via a SID.
So we're going to go ahead and we're going to send those AD groups as unqualified names. We happen to be using an attribute here called role. So when Patrick later on talks about role, he's talking about the context of what does someone do in that organization. At this point, we're just using it as an attribute name as well. So that's the ADFS V2 side done. So what we're going to do now is go ahead and jump onto the SharePoint box. Right, there we go. And let's just minimize that for the moment. And so there's no way to set up a new identity provider in the GUI. The only way to do it is through PowerShell. And you'll find we have four lines and a little PowerShell script here. The first one is just it's identifying the certificate of our partners, the signing certificate that our partners' ADFS V2 server is going to use to sign the tokens. The next two lines are the claim type mappings. So as you can see, there's the XML there that we agreed with our partner that we were going to use to bring across the email address, and below it you'll see the one for role. It is important you do need at least one claim that is a unique identifier, and in our case we're using email address. And we've also specified the realm there, and then you'll see we go ahead and create that PowerShell commandlet there, create new SP trusted identity token issuer. We'll create the that for us. So let's go ahead and run that. Praise to demo gods. And there's another little commandlet we can use here, get SP trusted identity token issuer, which will just show us the state of any trusted identity providers we have registered. So you'll see there we can see the name, we can see the certificate that it's used for signing. We can also see a little further up, you'll see those two claims attributes that we decided to pass across. So, so how do we now use that? What we need to do is we go into central administration, we can look at our web applications, and if we look at our SharePoint application, we can look at the identity providers. This is part of the default zone.
It's just important to note here that the web application has to be provisioned in claims-based mode, not classic. If it is in classic, you can do a one-off convert to get it into claims. Other than that, the web application itself has to be in claims.
So you notice we have no anonymous access there, we've got no Windows Auth enabled, no Formspace enabled. And you'll see under our trusted identity providers, we already had our internal one. We now have a new one there, which is our partner, which we just set up. So once we go ahead and save that and close it, what you will find is when Patrick comes to do his next demo, when we look to assign permissions, we'll see both of those identity providers now be available, and under each one of them will be the attributes that we defined in the claim type mappings. So again, this just reinforces the importance of deciding what the syntax of those claims that you want to pass across, because if you don't define it at this point, it's not going to be available for you to choose. So that's probably a good point to hand over to Patrick, and he can talk about those changes to permissions. Broken it. Okay. Why is that not? There we go. It's back.
All right, so we've seen covered off at the moment the installation of ADFS, how that's configured for SharePoint, and then what you need to do in SharePoint to make it aware that it's now got an ADFS provider in there. That's fantastic. And we've set up our relationships to our partners. Now partners want to be able to log in. Now it's going to be the turn of the SharePoint administrator to come along and go, okay, we're going to have external users or our partner users now coming in and accessing resources in our SharePoint environment. How do we go about applying permissions to those users? There's a couple of things to note here when I take you through it. But we've got a few screenshots here. You're going to use the same people picker view for assigning permissions. The primary difference here is we're not looking for an individual coming from the partner. We're looking for a role that in this particular case, that partner user belongs to. And aside from that, we're going to apply permissions into SharePoint pretty much the same way. There are a few gotchas here, which I will demonstrate through, about how SharePoint actually goes about resolving that particular role that we're going to be choosing, and then how it actually validates it. All right, so we have a web application set up here called SharePoint. Just a standard web application. It's the one Graham was just in, where he set up the ADFS provider. We have just a couple of demonstration screens here. If I go into site pages, let's see, just a couple of custom pages set up, which we'll be demoing.
That, by the way, that's the Home Realm provider page. So you see, because now we've entered, because we now have two identity providers, that was showing you the Home Realm identifier page.
Whereas before, when Graham logged in, it just went straight through because it was using the default identity provider. Now that there's more than one, it brings up the Realm page for you. Yes. Or, more importantly, as Graham alluded to earlier, you might want to pre-identify where your partner user is coming from, and just simply redirect them to the correct federated service, which would be a lot nicer. You'd see it's very similar to if you're doing forms-based authentication. If you have Windows Auth or some type of forms-based authentication, a very similar screen will be shown to you. And same methodology, you can bypass those screens depending on where that user is coming from. We have a few pages set up here. One is called NZ Post Managers. Now, I can access this because I'm a site collection administrator. It's a page that has a few permissions assigned to it. And then we have a KiwiBank only page. Now, when I get to demonstrate assigning an NZ Post user, we're going to see that NZ Post user is not going to have access to this KiwiBank only page, only to the NZ Post Managers page. So I'm going to go to NZ Post Managers, I'm going to go to the page, and I'm going to assign permission directly on the page. I'm using the page as an item in this case, page permissions. Very similar to the screenshot, we're going to use users and groups, we're going to go to the picker itself. Now you'll see in the picker we have NZ Post ADFS V2. And once it's expanded, we're going to see the two attributes that were set and pre-agreed upon, email address and role. I'm going to click on role and do a search by role. And what I'm looking for is NZ Post Managers. Managers? Manager?
Managers, with an M, not an N.
Thank you. Now, you will note that that has returned a value, NZ Post Managers. So here's a question for a prize, a copy of our Office Professional. Is this value returned to me? Has it been validated?
No.
No, it has not been validated. I could type in anything under that find, and it will resolve and look like it's valid. So this is very important. If through the ADFS we had defined the security group as a SID, I would need to be typing under the find command here a SID. SID is very long, lots of potential for mistyping the SID. You have to be very careful at this stage that the value you enter does match the attribute set for that value. The value set for that attribute. Because at this stage you will not know if it's wrong until you get to that point where the external user tries to come in, and you'll see if the claim's accepted or rejected. So I'm just going to go ahead and add this one. But to demonstrate that, you can add absolutely anything. Pretty interesting. Now, because we've got two ADFS providers, I'm going to get I'm not a user coming from both of them.
Yeah, the two attributes. So.
And I can even add that. But it's not valid. I'll leave it in there anyway. Right, now it's at this stage. This is a familiar screen. As for all your Windows users, you're simply going to grant them permissions. I'm going to grant these users full control, or this role full control, and I'm going to go OK. So once you've defined the permission against the role attribute, you can now see that they're presented in the permissions list. And you can see that there are claims as differentiated by the funny characters before the description. Keyboard's not working. Demo gods are not smiling today on this one. Try that again.
There you go. It's working now.
So now I'm on the NZ Post, ADFS Active Directory server. I'm going to use this one. This is where the NZ Bank side of, the NZ Post side of ADFS was created. And I'm going to use this one for actually browsing back to the KiwiBank SharePoint environment.
Oh, that's going to default to the IDP page, so you just want to change the URL there to SharePoint.
You see the identity realm page come up. We're going to choose NZ Post. Again, this is the part where you can automatically redirect that user to the correct federated service that they need to be getting their token from. It will work, I hope. Certainly thinking about it. Right, what should happen? Oh, there we go.
NZ Post. Oop. SSO to what? So the only reason I got prompted by credentials there is because it's not in the trusted zone. That's mainly so that we can impersonate different people if we want to.
Yeah, I'm logged in as an administrator into this NZ Post server.
So key thing you'll notice there is if you look up in the top right-hand corner, you'll see that the user identifier has correctly been identified as fred@nzpost.co.nz.
Now, we can see that going back to site pages, I can see the NZ Post Managers page. I can no longer see the KiwiBank page. Does anyone know why I cannot see the KiwiBank page? Sorry? No? Well, yes, but why? It's a function of SharePoint. Security. Who said that first? Come up and see me afterwards. I've got a copy of a CD here for you. It's being also security trimmed away. But what's important is, can they actually access the page denoted for them? Yes, they can. So an important thing here to note is when assigning permissions to ADFS users coming external to your organization is that you're not doing it on the person coming from that organization. You're doing it on the attributes associated with that person, in this case, a role or an email address. Very important that you get your spelling right, as it will automatically resolve no matter what you put into SharePoint.
Do you want to hit the claims web part while we're there?
Yes. Let me flick back to the other one for that.
No, that claims web part was written by a guy called Steve Pishka. He runs a blog called Serendipity. And it's absolutely fantastic. So that is showing you there all the claims that were presented to SharePoint.
So for this one, we can see that the user is admin. It's coming from trusted ADFS, so the KiwiBank ADFS is true. We can see the farm ID. We can see the token reference. So we can see that this was a successful token pass through to SharePoint. And Graham's going to come up. He's going to show you the other side, especially around troubleshooting, which the web part is great in helping to solve troubleshooting issues, but also around the event viewer and how you can track some of the error messages that come through when trying to figure out why the ADFS communication is not working correctly.
Could you not present all the attributes?
We muddied the waters there a little bit. Role is both an attribute plus what the user, plus what the user's role was within inside the enterprise organization.
So, the key thing is that's a KiwiBank user. If we pop back across to the NZ Post one, and let's try that again. If we pop back to that NZ Post user we logged on as, and we click on the claims web part, you'll see what we do have the role. Yep.
Or multiple, depending on how many that they win against.
So you can see that guy is actually a member of the AD group domain users, and he's a member of the AD group NZ Post managers. So remember when we configured ADFS V2, we did it as a direct mapping. That can also involve a translation. And you could also translate it when it comes into SharePoint as well. So you can translate it all over the place if you want to. Sender, So what kinds of things normally go wrong here? There's a few of them. Obviously, the first one is that something's not right in the partner's ADFS store attribute mapping. So that question was just about, how do we get the stuff out of that partner directory and into a claim? Well, if they don't do it in the way you expect, that's somewhere it can go wrong. The second place it can go wrong is in that when we did the claims mapping in PowerShell there, that we get a syntax error there. So although the partner is passing us the claim in the correct way, we're not bringing it into SharePoint because we made a typo in that claims mapping. And the third place where it normally goes wrong, like Patrick said, is that the values from the directory don't match. So if we have a typo in NZ Post managers, if we put an extra space in, if we take a space out, then that's not going to match. So what are the best ways to troubleshoot this? Well, there's two really helpful things here. One is that claims web part, which we just saw from Steve Peschke. And so that's showing you what claims SharePoint actually managed to decode and were presented to it. But then on the other side, how do we see what the partner, what was actually issued in the claim by ADFS V2? And the best way we can do that is we can turn on ADFS V2 audit logging. And what that will do is for every single token which gets issued, we will get an event log entry showing us all the claims attributes that it issued to that user. And by matching those two up, you can figure out where things are going wrong.
By default, there are a couple of tick boxes that you need to set in ADFS 2, which Graham is going to show you very quickly. So that you can also track successes and failures on the receiving side as well.
Is there a way to limit the groups that get passed across from the two apart?
What you agree to?
Yeah. So can you filter them in some way? Do you mean like?
I wouldn't want to give all my security groups.
Yeah. So you could custom when you do the ADFS attribute mapping, you could select just to give them individual ones or a subset, or you could create a custom mapping rule there that did some kind of translation.
Can you make a default claim directly from the ADFS server? So can you say, I assert that they're coming from this company? So not actually pass through the security groups, you just say...
Yeah, and you could just put a fixed piece of text as a claim, or even providing you send a unique identifier, Yeah, no problem. Right, so we were looking at the audit log file.
However, when it comes to SharePoint, we need a way of discerning what access they should have or not have. So if we just stopped it there, we're not going to have enough information to divvy up the permissions inside of SharePoint.
But if they don't have a digital group that you're on, maybe that's...
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have some kind of cut. Yeah.
Well, when we looked at using ADLBS as an attribute store.
You could do that. So here we go. Here's to get those success and failure audits, if you look at the Federation service properties, you'll see that by default, both success and failure audits are not enabled. So if you go ahead and enable success audits there, then what you'll get in your event viewer, if you filter your log for the event source ADFS 2.0 auditing and event ID 500, you'll get those event ID. You'll get those events that we showed earlier.
The ADFS console.
So first of all, I went to the ADFS 2.0 console.
Full screen.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Not full screen.
Full screen.
Why won't that let me full screen it? No, I have you full screen. Cool.
Well, no, it's not liking my laptop.
No, it's not liking that. Yeah. Let's just see if I can drag that across for you. Yep. Oh, drag the whole window. There we go. Yeah, so if you look at that, Federation service properties, success and failure, those aren't ticked by default. So that will turn it on. You can then go to the event log and audit on the source being ADFS 2.0 auditing and the event ID 500, and that'll give you those. So we have another bunch of little hints and tips. So one really cool one is that ADFS actually comes with an inbuilt page called the IDP Initiated Sign-On page, which enables you to check whether ADFS is effectively able to function, whether you can log in, authenticate, and issue yourself a token. And that's a really, really fast way of troubleshooting whether your problem lies with ADFS or whether it lies with SharePoint. So the first thing to try is if you can log into that page, you know ADFS is working and you know you can issue a token. And that means you should start looking at the SharePoint side of things. If you can't log into that page, don't bother looking at the SharePoint side of things because ADFS ain't working. So that's just a really good tool for...
You show them that page?
Yeah. And if we jump on to... Jump on to this one. Come on. Cool. If we jump on to this. So that's what you'll get when you browse to that page. It's literally just got a sign-in button. I can't remember. I don't have this in the trusted sites. So I'll have to log in. But if you added that to trusted sites, and literally that's all you get. And the good thing is that will in itself generate one of those event log entries if you had logging turned on. So great way to just figure out whether your problem's with ADFS or with SharePoint. So the next few are just some slightly quirky things, really, that might confuse you. One is that if you use a certificate to create a SP Trusted Identity Token Issuer, you cannot use that same certificate to create another one. Now, that's not something that you're ever likely to do in production, but when you're sort of prototyping or developing things, it's an unexpected behavior. You have to delete the certificate, the token issuer that uses that certificate, and create a new one. This next one down really has some interesting implications, and that's that it is only supported to change the claims mappings when you create the Trusted Identity Token Issuer. Now, I can tell you that I have tried changing them on ones that already exist, and it has worked in my experience. But it's important to note that it is not supported. Now, if we think about why that's important, say you had an agreement with your partner and you said that you're going to pass across email address, role, and manager's name. But all of a sudden, you decide that you now want to set permissions in SharePoint based on the office or the region they come from. And that's not an attribute that you had in the mapping. You're going to have to delete that identity provider and create a new one, which means you will lose any of those custom permissions you've assigned on pages. So hence why it's so important to think about any of the ones that you might ever use. And you don't need to use all the attributes that you pass across. So pass everything across and put them all in the mappings if you think that there's any possibility you might use them. Because if you won't be able to, or it's not supported to add them later on. Another couple of interesting features. SharePoint very cleverly looks at the tokens which are presented to it by users and looks at their lifetime. And when they're getting close to their expiration date, it automatically goes and reissues them one, which is very nice. Only if the lifetime of the tokens it's getting are less than that expiration window, it just sits in an infinite loop. And by default, that's 10 minutes. You can change it. But again, when you're prototyping stuff, if you try and turn the lifetimes down to make sure that your lifetimes are working, that's an interesting little snag. Another one is that the SharePoint token cookies are by default written to disk in a persistent. So if you log in to SharePoint using this, have a session going, shut that session down and go back into it, providing the underlying token still hasn't expired, you will go straight back in. Again, that's not necessarily bad behavior, it just might not be expected. So you can change that to have session cookie behavior if you would prefer. And the last point we've got here is really about there are a number of things. If you're in any kind of development environment and your ADFS v2 servers do not have internet access, you'll find you tend to have appalling performance unless you do a couple of things. One is disabling the automatic update of root certificates. The other one tends to be disabling certificate revocation list checking. Basically, they will eventually succeed. Just the time it takes for it to do so means that some of the services sometimes time out. And we do have a few little links here on the in the presentation. One is to the code to display those to display the web part. And while I mention that, actually, that's a good point. In that blog, he's got not only the web part, but there is also a DLL which can log those, log the claims to the ULS log. The reason why that's quite useful is the web part's fine for people who can actually get into SharePoint. But if the user isn't able to get into SharePoint at all, you can't get to the page to see the web part. So the DLL can log that to the ULS log, and you can then look at what claims that person had, even if they can't get into SharePoint. There's also a link there to the MSDM page about customizing the client logon and home realm discovery pages. So that's about all we've got for you today. Obviously, if you can fill in the session evaluations, and we'd really thank you because this has been both Patrick's and mine first presentation at TechEd, so I hope if things haven't gone quite as smoothly as with some others, you'll bear that in mind. And yeah, does anyone have any questions?
Have you had any issues with Safari?
Can't say I've actually tried cross-browser support at all. Right. Right. I don't have any personal experience. We have reverse proxies. So it is hosted internally, but we have reverse proxies, and we have two-factor authentication in line with that.
It wouldn't really matter where the SharePoint was hosted, whether it was in a DMZ.
It's not about the ECS, I'm worried about privacy and security. You know, I understand that you can put it anywhere, but coming into a SharePoint from putting it into your DMZ, so I know some people have got the SharePoint in the DMZ and the SharePoint within the domain. But what you're saying is that you think it's equally as safe just to stick it into your domain without it actually going through
Well, I mean, we don't have it in our DMZ. What we have is a reverse proxy, so the connections are not made directly from the external entities. Also, I mean, we don't use it for, transactional information or anything like that. Mostly we're using it for sharing, project or process documentation with our partners. If we were, if we're account or financially related, that might be a very different story.
So basically,
I mean, I wouldn't do it without proxying it in some way, without some kind of web application firewall, reverse proxy, and potentially, like I say, in our case, for the content that's sensitive enough, we also have two-factor with RSA tokens. And we do endpoint inspection, so we check that the device on the other end has approved antivirus, is patched. You know, if you can do those kinds of things, and those aren't SharePoint capabilities, I'm talking reverse proxy capabilities, if you can do those kinds of things, that might help a lot convincing your security guys.
The other thing is, does
SharePoint actually list the SDS itself? Yes, it does. It has an internal
SDS. It's one of the service applications.
So you can actually issue tokens to send somewhere else?
No, I don't believe so. But I think, yeah. From what I understand, that's been very
locked down.
Yeah.
SharePoint use only.
Anyone else got anything? Yep.
So you talked a little bit at the start about the profile part. So the partnership is about understanding who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this work in the context of the SharePoint profile in terms of knowing, this is John?
So the key thing to think about there is you're not going to know who a user is until the moment they log in. So unlike a sort of typical situation where you've got the profile service was going out and querying the directory before Joe logs in to know who Joe is, who his manager is, what site he works at, you're not going to know anything about Joe until the instant he arrives and he's got claims. So if there are things you'd like to know about him, like his phone number or his manager, the best way of doing that is to get that organization to pass them across as claims. And then you can either get to that programmatically or... we're looking at modifying that web part viewer to be able to display that information.
Can you mix Windows integrated authentication against your own internal AD and the claims-based authentication from an external partner on the same SharePoint site?
On the same web application? Yes, you can. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yes, and that's in
the... Yep.
Could also
fit
your internal
AD. Correct. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely, you can do that. In this case, you can use the Clever Smartster as well, and depending on where the user is coming from, you could differentiate between the internal users, they automatically go Windows authentication, as opposed to external partner access, which then get redirected to a federated service.
All right, thank you very much.